lei Amanda Knox.
Amanda Knox.
Amanda Knox.
Thank you to everyone who's believed in me, who's defended me, who's supported my family.
Being able to get up when you want, step in the grass when you want, she's almost kind of reborn in a way.
At night, he called me up to his third floor in an empty office. He was fixated on the topic of sex. Now I realized that he was testing me to see if I reacted badly. He wanted to get a reaction or some information from me.
She's developed quite the fear, a fear of people that she never had before.
How do you lock up a 20-year-old girl for 4 years for something that she didn't do?
When he looked in the eyes of Amanda Knox, he thought that she was evil.
54 mistakes in the gathering of the DNA in that room. We've got to find out why and how this happened.
I lost one of my daughters for a while. It's not going to happen again.
Amanda Knox, the untold story.
The welcome home signs in Seattle say it all.
My family's the most important thing to me right now, and I just want to go and be with them.
And Amanda Knox is doing just that, reconnecting with family, friends, and adjusting to freedom. Her dad, Kurt Knox.
We've now kind of woken up and realized that the nightmare is over. Living for 4 years inside a concrete and steel, you know, prison, and now being able to kind of just look around, smell the air, makes a huge difference.
It's almost hard to believe that days earlier, her face was filled with fear as Amanda Knox stood up in court with the whole world watching to deliver the most important speech of her young life.
Io non sono quello che loro dicono.
In fluent Italian, she spoke forcefully and emotionally, proclaiming her innocence in the murder of her roommate, Meredith Kircher.
La perversione, la violenza, il dispetto per la vita e per la persona non mi appartengono. E non ho fatto le cose che loro suggeriscono che avrei fatto. Non ho ucciso, non ho violentato, non ho rubato, non ero là, non ero presente a questo crimine.
More than 10 hours later, the tension was almost unbearable. A judge read the verdict.
Assolve entrambi gli imputati dai
not guilty.
Silenzio! Silenzio, per favore! Silenzio!
Amanda was quickly rushed from the courtroom. It was the end of a long and difficult road for her family.
I watched Amanda, and I saw her slump, and I went, no. And then our attorney that speaks English turned around and said, she's free. Couldn't tell you. Couldn't be better.
Her family had sacrificed everything to be near her. And so did one very determined best friend, 24-year-old Madison Paxton. Madison moved to Perugia last year and played a crucial behind-the-scenes role as morale booster and confidant as Amanda prepared for her new trial.
your spunkiness and the nature of your relationship with Amanda, you've really encouraged her to stand up and fight.
Oh yeah, very much so. I remind her that you can be mad, that you should be mad, and that it's fine for you to defend yourself.
Just about every Tuesday and Saturday for the past 10 months, Madison took a 15-minute bus ride and then set out on a 20-minute walk to see her best friend in prison. Her visits provided much-needed human contact during times of desolation and despair.
I remember one time when I visited her and she just had an eyelash, and so of course I just brushed it off. And the letter I got from her a few days later, she wrote how much it meant to her that I brushed off her eyelash, just because it's like a kind, friendly physical gesture, and that just doesn't exist for her anymore.
Madison kept a video diary at 48 Hours' request.
I don't know. She's beyond heartbroken. She is depressed. She's absolutely terrified.
The powerful entries provide us with an inside look at what Amanda was thinking and feeling while trapped behind bars.
And Amanda, she's just like, why do people feel they have a right to like make these presentations about my life when I've never met them and they don't know me? And I just turned to her and I was like, babe, because you're a character to them. You're not a person, you're a character.
Our investigation reveals an incredible story of how police and a powerful prosecutor twisted the evidence to fit their theory of the crime.
And it started on November 2nd, 2007, with the murder of her 21-year-old British roommate.
Police say Meredith Kircher was found partially clothed and had been left in a pool of blood with a deep cut to her throat.
Amanda had no idea how quickly she would turn from witness to suspect. Her troubles began with a kiss that would be played over and over again on Italian TV. Investigative journalist and CBS News consultant Bob Graham.
And from right at the beginning, with those series of kisses, Amanda Knox was demonized in the Italian mind.
Yes, it showed a callousness, it showed a disregard for this moment when her flatmate had been murdered.
And if Amanda could be so cold, prosecutor Giuliano Manini thought, that meant she could also be involved. Amanda's mother, Etta Mellis, had a very different view.
It's not passionate kissing. It's comforting and consoling behavior. She was devastated. You can tell she's in shock.
Ironically, Amanda's eagerness to stay in Perugia and help the police was backfiring on her.
She had the opportunity on several occasions to leave the country. Her aunt in Germany phoned and said, Amanda, your mum says you should get out of the country. And she said, no, I want to stay here. I want to help solve my flatmate's murderer.
Amanda was interrogated for a total of 50 hours over 4 days. No attorney. None of the questioning was recorded.
And these are people who are trained to break mafia suspects.
Yeah, they break mafia. And here they had a little 20-year-old yoga hippie from Seattle who thought that everybody was wonderful and just wanted to go have coffee together.
The brutal interrogation ended with Amanda confessing, putting herself at the scene and implicating another person, her boss at a local bar where she worked, Patrick Lumumba. Author Nina Burley has been studying the case.
She signed a statement that says, I see myself in the house. Patrick is with me. Patrick Lumumba, he has gone into Meredith's bedroom, and I can hear her screams.
The statement Amanda signed implicated Patrick with a bizarre and awkward line. I confusedly remember that he killed her.
I take offense with the word confession because Amanda never says that she participated in the murder of her friend. She never confesses to being part of that crime, ever.
There were many troubling details about that so-called confession. But it was all the police chief of Perugia needed to arrest Amanda, Raffaele, and Patrick Lumumba for the murder of Meredith Kircher.
And he had the nerve to say, case closed. We've solved this murder. That's okay if you've got the evidence.
In fact, none of the forensic evidence, including the DNA testing, had even come back. But the prosecutor insisted his gut, and Meredith's near-naked body told him how the murder had occurred during a drug-fueled orgy. And Amanda was the ringleader.
Amanda was presented as extremely attractive, having lots of sex, decided one night to act on these completely diabolical urges and bewitched two men into attacking her roommate.
And the world's media ate it up.
Amanda's beauty, did that play a role in all of this?
It definitely sells more papers if you have two beautiful, beautiful women and in headlines that there was some attempt at an orgy between them.
To prosecutor Manini, an orgy that led to a satanic killing. The fate of Amanda Knox has always been inextricably linked to prosecutor Giuliano Manini.
His worldview is, evil walks on this earth. There are people in his community who are practicing occult rituals, who maybe worship the devil.
Nina Burley, author of The Fatal Gift of Beauty, says that the closer Manini looked at Meredith Kircher's murder...
A body has been found. It's very spooky. It's the night after Halloween.
The more he began to see not only evidence, but the specter of the supernatural.
It happened on a Thursday night. That's when the witches held their Sabbath.
Witches? The Sabbath? It sounds laughable, but Nina says Manini sees the face of evil everywhere.
I think that when he looked in the eyes of Amanda Knox, he thought that she was evil.
To Manini, a staunch Catholic with a medieval mindset, Amanda Knox was a sinner who took part in a satanic orgy that resulted in the murder of an innocent.
This is ridiculous. This is absolutely insane, and it's unfounded.
Amanda's friend, Madison Paxton.
The claims that they put against Amanda, that she was so sexually powerful that she could manipulate these two men who she didn't even really know, it tells you a lot more about the person making the claims than about the person those claims are made against.
But Manini did not back down. Not even when he was forced to release Patrick Lumumba, who had a solid alibi. And not even when the DNA evidence came back and seemed to exonerate Amanda and Raffaele.
There is nothing in that room out of all those 400 samples that places Amanda or Raffaele in that room. You can't go into a room and selectively just clean up your DNA and leave everybody else's DNA there. It's impossible. It can't be done.
A bloody fingerprint found at the scene gave Manini a new suspect, Rudy Gade, an African immigrant who is known to have confronted people with a knife.
He was hanging around with these students and partying with them and pretending to be like them, but he wasn't like them at all. And in order to keep up with them, he started apparently getting involved in breaking and entering.
Gade was tracked down, arrested, and charged with Meredith's murder.
His bloody fingerprint is there.
Absolutely.
His footprint is there.
Yep.
DNA.
Absolutely.
And he fled to Germany.
And he admits he was there. He admits cradling her body as she was bleeding to death, feeling bad about it. So bad that he ran out of there carrying her money. He felt so bad that he went to a disco and partied. He felt so bad that he disappeared to Germany to let other people take the rap for it. That's how bad he feels.
Even with Gade in custody, Manini refused to believe that only one person was responsible.
He believes deeply in conspiracies. Conspiracy is part of his investigative DNA.
Manini believed he was in possession of the murder weapon, a kitchen knife found in the apartment of Raffaele Sollecito, Amanda's boyfriend.
The Roman scientific police claimed they found an infinitesimal amount of DNA on the handle related to Amanda and an infinitesimal amount of DNA on the blade relating to Meredith.
all that was left for Manini was to establish a link between Rudy Gaudet, Amanda, and Raffaele. The police began pressuring Gaudet.
First statement from Rudy Gaudet, Amanda had nothing to do with it. Those are his own words. Following statements, he's moving her more into the story. He gets up and says, she did have something to do with it. She was there.
And was the instigator.
And was the instigator.
In 2008, Gaudet went on trial first. He was convicted of killing Meredith Kircher and sentenced to 30 years in prison. Manini told the court that Gaudet had expressed remorse, and later his sentence was reduced to 16 years. The stage was set. Amanda and Raffaele's trial began in January 2009, and by then, Manini had another piece of evidence that reportedly had Raffaele's DNA on it.
A piece of Meredith Kircher's bra that had been cut off by the killer.
Manini barreled ahead with his prosecution, convinced that Amanda, Raffaele, and Rudy Gaudet all conspired and took part in the murder of Meredith Kircher. And the press, Graham says, played a key role.
I don't just blame the prosecutor and the police in this. I also attribute a lot of blame to the media. They bought the lies. They helped create the perception that existed that Amanda Knox was the she-devil and Raphael Salicetto was her slave.
At nearly every turn, Amanda was losing the publicity war. After the kiss came this videotape showing Amanda shopping for quote-unquote sexy underwear a day or two after Meredith's murder. Never mind that all her clothes were locked up at the crime scene.
The public was fed a diet of untruths, myths, rumors, falsehoods, lies about Amanda Knox and Raphael Salicetto.
Manini spun a fantastic tale for jurors, filled with graphic details about the violent sex orgy on the night Meredith was murdered.
It was made up. It was fantasy.
An Italian magazine created these drawings based on Manini's theory, showing Amanda plunging a knife into Meredith. In December 2009, after a trial that lasted nearly a year, a smiling Amanda Knox walked into the court at nearly midnight, convinced the jury had seen the truth and that she'd soon be going home.
She did not think for a single moment that she was actually going to be convicted. It never really fully entered into any of our minds that it could actually happen. She very ideally thought that the truth was enough.
But the jury found a different truth. Amanda was found guilty of killing Meredith Kircher and sentenced to 26 years. Raffaele got 25 years.
It's a complete miscarriage of justice, and it's a travesty to the Italian judicial system.
Amanda, trapped in an Italian prison, soon had a more immediate problem. A prison official she feared was on the prowl for sex. "48 Hours" has learned just how frightening those first dark days in prison were for Amanda Knox. Right from the beginning, she was terrified that she might be sexually assaulted.
This is a letter that came to me from Amanda.
Investigative journalist Bob Graham read Amanda's letter detailing cruel manipulation and incidents of sexual intimidation. She described how a high-ranking prison administrator ordered her into his office alone at night to talk about sex.
He was fixated on the topic of sex, with whom I'd done it, how I liked it, if I would like to do it with him. When I realized that he really wanted to talk to me about sex, I would try to change the subject.
Amanda writes that she was particularly frightened because the administrator, quote, acted as if he was the king of the castle.
Therefore, I thought he didn't have to answer to anyone for his behavior.
Amanda eventually came to believe that the administrator had a different motive, that he was perhaps trying to support the prosecution's theory that she really was a sex-crazed she-devil who killed Meredith during a violent orgy.
I realized that he was testing me to see if I reacted badly, to understand me personally. He wanted to get a reaction or some information from me. I did not get the seriousness of the situation.
The intimidation reportedly ended after Amanda's lawyers complained.
What does this letter say to you about what she's been going through?
It says at a time when she was clearly traumatized by the murder of her flatmate, and here she was being pressured in a prison system, a system that at least she should have had some degree of safety. And there was this guy, a senior officer in this prison, now pressing her about sex. Pressing her, do you want to have sex with me?
Bob Graham spoke with the administrator, who admitted he and Amanda discussed the topic of sex, but claims she brought it up. Madison Paxton says Amanda stood her ground, showing remarkable strength.
It's still her life, and the only way that the prosecution wins is if she becomes some broken, bitter person who relies on the free and abundant tranquilizers at the prison. She's never done that, and she's beyond determined to not do that.
Her focus was the appeal, and she soon had a world-renowned ally.
This case horrifies me. I'd like to say it shocks me, but I've seen others like it.
Psychologist and professor Saul Kassin is an expert on police interrogations.
Except that what you're saying to him is not on record.
Right.
Your signature? On record.
On his own initiative, Kassin filed a report with the Italian court on Amanda's behalf. It outlines some of the psychological reasons why Amanda could have confessed to a murder she did not commit.
Amanda Knox, like everybody, has a breaking point. She reached her breaking point. 8 or 10 or 12 police officials in a tag team manner come in and interrogate her. Their goal is a confession, and they're not leaving that room without it.
At her first trial, Amanda told the court just how badly the Italian police had intimidated her.
I was very, very scared because they were treating me so badly. I didn't understand why. They told me that I was trying to protect someone, but I wasn't trying to protect anyone, but they continued to call me a stupid liar.
She's obviously in a state of grief or shock. She is accused, she's called a liar when she denies having any involvement. She's in a foreign place, and she's being interrogated in a language in which she's not fluent.
And what does that do to someone?
She's confused, she's disoriented.
Hour after sleepless hour passed, with no food, no water, no bathroom breaks, and no attorney. During that brutal interrogation, Amanda's mother says it was the police who first brought up the name Patrick Lumumba, Amanda's boss. They had discovered that Amanda had exchanged texts with him the night of the murder. Amanda's last message said, "See you later."
See you later is an American way of saying goodbye.
Yeah.
But in Italian, it's not, is it?
No, and they took that to mean we're making an appointment to get together later tonight. That's the way they interpreted it.
And they kept saying, you said this thing to Patrick. We know that you left the house. We know. I just said his name.
She didn't know it at the time, but the moment she named Patrick Lumumba would seal Amanda's fate. She described it in the letter to Bob Graham.
So I said, Patrick. Nearly all the police officers leapt up. They hugged each other and went off in search of Patrick. In the meantime, I just cried. I curled up into a ball and bawled my eyes out. I don't know how long I cried. I was so tired. I couldn't think.
Hours later, Amanda signed that confession that placed her in the house where Meredith was killed.
I believe Amanda's confession is false. I believe Amanda is innocent. If she was there, wouldn't she have known that Patrick wasn't there? Wouldn't she have known that Rudy was there? The reason she didn't know those things is that she wasn't there.
She later recanted, but it was too late. The damage done, she was officially under arrest. 3 years after the murder, Amanda is ready to attack all the prosecution's evidence head on at her appeal. The confession, the eyewitnesses, and the DNA.
you can't even put into words, as we sit here and talk to you, what it must be like for her. I mean, our lives are not on the line. Her life is. It's going to be put in somebody else's hands again.
And the prosecution would not go down without a fight.
Amanda Knox.
Amanda Knox.
With all the brouhaha over Amanda Knox, it's sometimes easy to forget the murdered woman at the center of this case.
Meredith still leaves quite a big hole in our lives.
Yeah.
Meredith Kircher, seen here in this music video. But Amanda's father, Kurt, says his thoughts are never far from the Kircher family.
They've experienced the worst thing that a parent could ever experience at the loss of a child. You know, you can't even describe what they must be going through as well.
The ordeal was still far from over for any of the families, Meredith's, Amanda's, or Raffaele Selecito's. It was back to court as Amanda and Raffaele appealed their murder convictions.
We know she's innocent. She knows that she's innocent. She's not afraid of the truth.
A lot had changed in Perugia since the first trial ended.
If we were to walk up to an average person here in Perugia and ask them, describe Amanda Knox, what would they say after all of this media blitz?
3 years ago, everyone would have said, she is evil, she is the killer. Now, I think you would get a pretty strong number of people who would say, well, perhaps she's not the person that we thought she was.
That attitude carried into this second trial, which was presided over by a new judge.
He started the appeals trial with a very clear statement, and that was, the only thing we know for certain is that Meredith Kircher is dead.
True to his word, this judge asked independent experts to review the key DNA evidence in the case. What they discovered shocked most observers.
54 mistakes in the gathering of the DNA in that room. That's shoddy work. That's appalling work.
During the first trial, Prosecutor Manini had said a kitchen knife found in Raffaele's house had Amanda's DNA on the handle and Meredith's on the blade. Damning if true.
Meredith Kircher's DNA was not on the blade.
Not on the blade?
Not on the blade. Indeed, Amanda Knox's was on the handle, but she never doubted it.
And why was Amanda's DNA on the handle?
Because she cooked in Raffaele's house. Her DNA was on the handle and rye bread residue was on the blade. So obviously she had been using that knife to cut bread in Raffaele's house.
And then there was that small clasp from Meredith's bra supposedly containing Raffaele's DNA.
The bra clasp, the one piece of evidence that Prosecutor Manini said definitely put Raffaele Selecito in the murder room. What happened to that piece of evidence?
Again, thrown out. Thrown out. Contaminated.
In this police video, crime scene technicians collect this key piece of evidence 6 weeks after the murder. Using dirty gloves, they pick it up and then place the bra clasp back on the floor.
Go back to the phrase, the forensics will tell us everything. And it did. And it does. There is zero evidence against Knox and zero evidence against Selecito.
In fact, not a single text, email, or phone call has ever been found that links Amanda and Raffaele to Rudy Gadet.
I'm a vampire. Come Dracula.
Who has admitted holding a blood-soaked Meredith in his arms the night of the murder. And important witnesses from the first trial appeared to be discredited this time around.
One of the biggest witnesses was a homeless guy who was a drug addict who said that he saw Amanda and Raffaele arguing, nervously standing around above the house around the time that the murder would have occurred. Well, come to find out in the appeal, this guy's a heroin addict. He could barely walk to the witness stand.
The judge even stopped the questioning and basically just said, you're out of here.
Take him away.
Things were looking up for Amanda, but she couldn't help but worry, said her friend, Madison Paxton.
As things start to slowly look better with the trial, it kind of hurts to hope because we know what it felt like the first time that they were convicted. And you have this acknowledgement in your head that's like, wow, this would actually genuinely destroy her if she was convicted again. In some ways, it's easier psychologically to be filled with despair. Does that make sense?
One irony in this case is that the Italian authorities actually did a great job. In less than 3 weeks, they had the person who murdered Meredith Kircher.
Indeed.
They arrested Rudy Gadet, and they had the evidence against him.
Absolutely. They'd also dug a hole so deep that they couldn't get out of it. That was the problem. And pride, vanity, whatever it was, ensured that they just kept digging.
But Manini would not let go of his theory that Gadet did not kill Meredith by himself, but had help from Amanda and Raffaele.
So, as Prosecutor Manini watches his case collapse around him, what does he do during the course of this appeal? He says that her sentence should be lengthened to life.
Exactly. It's mind-boggling. They're not going to give it up easily. I mean, there's a reason why vendetta is an Italian word.
After nearly 4 years in prison, Amanda was itching to get outside again.
She said today, she's like, Madison, it's been 3 years since I've been able to walk outside past 3 p.m. I miss walking at night. I miss stars. I miss that so much.
But Amanda would never see those stars again if prosecutors had their way. In closing arguments, prosecutors dismissed all questions about their forensic evidence and stood by their witnesses. Nothing, they said, had changed. Amanda and Raffaele were still guilty of murder.
What do you expect for tomorrow?
I don't know.
As the verdict nears, the world's media has now descended on Perugia.
As the final act of this four-year saga came to a head, it was clear that Amanda Knox was no longer the trusting 20-year-old hippie from Seattle, but instead a 24-year-old prisoner.
A lot of people have noticed she's lost weight. There's so much concern on her face. Are you worried?
Well, of course, as a mom, you're worried. You look at her and you know she's suffering. You know she's lost weight. She tells you she can't eat, she can't sleep because of the stress. Of course, it breaks your heart to watch that as a parent and know that she's dealing with all of that.
Just as he did with the infamous kiss, Manini, in his rebuttal, attacked Amanda and Raffaele's behavior, saying they did not react appropriately when gruesome crime scene photographs of Meredith Kircher were shown in court.
Amanda stava con gli occhi bassi. Raffaele stava guardava dall'altra parte.
You sit there and, you know, you want to yell out, lies, but you have to sit and quietly and remain composed. You watch your daughter being tortured, you know, emotionally tortured, sitting there having to listen to that stuff.
How are you feeling today, Mr. Knox?
But then, Raffaele and Amanda got their turn.
Non ho mai fatto del male a nessuno. Mai, nella vita.
The jurors were riveted as Raffaele removed a plastic bracelet.
su questo bracciale c'è scritto Liberi Amanda e Raffaele. Adesso penso che sia arrivato il momento di toglierlo.
A hush fell over the courtroom.
Paura.
As a visibly shaken Amanda began to speak.
E se io fosse là quella sera, io sarei morta. Come lei. La sola differenza è che io non c'ero. Io ero da Raffaele.
After thanking Raffaele for his support, Amanda addressed her so-called confession.
La mia fiducia assoluta nell'autorità della polizia è stata tradita e sto pagando con la mia vita per cose che non ho commesso.
As she ended her dramatic speech, three jurors were in tears.
Io voglio tornare a casa. Io voglio tornare alla mia vita. Io non voglio essere punita, privata dalla mia vita, dal mio futuro per qualcosa che non ho fatto. Perché io sono innocente. Lei è innocente. E noi meritiamo la libertà perché non abbiamo mai fatto qualcosa per dimeritarlo.
That night, the first verdict gave everyone pause.
Knox Amanda Marie colpevole del reato di calunnia.
Guilty. Amanda had slandered her former boss, Patrick Lumumba. She was sentenced to 3 years, time served. But then, the verdict Amanda longed for.
Assolve entrambi gli imputati dai reati loro scritti ai capi A, B, C e D.
She and Raffaele's murder convictions overturned. The emotional upheaval of her lost years was etched on her face. Her former boyfriend, Raffaele, stayed calm, as did the family of Meredith Kircher, who were in the courtroom. Meanwhile, the streets of Perugia exploded.
An extraordinary scene out here. The crowd surged forward. There was great disappointment. You can still hear some whistling. People are quite upset. Upset that she was found not guilty.
It was time for Amanda to make her last trip back to prison. And this time, she had company. Sitting next to her was the boy turned man who had been with her on every step of this journey, Raffaele Sollecito.
They were actually able to both sit in one of the cars that took them back to the prison. It kind of, to me, kind of became, you're now a human being again versus you're a prisoner. Amanda was crying so much that Raphael, you know, was telling her, we're free. You know, hey, why are you crying?
At the prison, Amanda said goodbye to some of her guards, including one who showed Amanda a touch of humanity.
There was actually a female guard there that actually put money on Amanda's account one time, you know, because it was kind of that motherly thing.
They're reminding me to speak in English. Because I'm having problems with that.
She missed a lot during her 4 years in prison, and now that she's free, Amanda is focused once again on her future.
Maybe in 5 years, she may be, you know, an advocate for people that have been wrongfully convicted. trying to have them feel what she felt and let it be known that there still is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Ruby Cadet was released from prison in 2020.